Hi, and welcome to this episode of Security Nation, the podcast where we talk to interesting people doing cool things to advance security in some way. I'm your host, Jen Ellis, the VP of Community and Public Affairs at Rapid7, and with me is my co-host, the amazing Dud Beardsley.
Amazing, not guaranteed.
I don't know, like you deliver pretty well from your garage where you're currently hanging out.
Which in America, we call them car holes. So.
Your car hole. Delightful. So this is what? Like, is this our second or third COVID installment?
I believe it's our third.
That sounds bad. It sounds like we're delivering an injection of COVID. No.
No.
Not all right. It just means that I'm in an attic and you're in a car hole. Awesome. All right. So I'm excited. This week we have John Strand joining us, who is the CEO, boss man, head honcho at Black Hills Consulting. Hey, John, how you doing?
Doing really well. It's not Black Hills Consulting. I think Black Hills Consulting sells furniture. But that's a completely different John Strand, which is not to be confused with male model John Strand. If you do a Google image search for me, I am not the male model that comes up.
No, Googling, please hold.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'll take a couple of seconds. It'll take a couple of seconds and you'll see.
Wow.
Yeah,
I mean, just the abs, they look painted on.
They're amazing. They're fantastic. You know what sucks is whenever I teach classes for like Black Hills Information Security or when I used to teach for SANS, I'd have students come up to me and be like, dude, you really let yourself go.
What you should do is get like a full-size poster board just of his chest and just wear it on you.
Oh, I don't need that. My wife has that for me. She has me wear it every once in a while.
I love that. Let me undo this as it's at the beginning.
No. Keep going. This is awesome.
Keep it in.
Black Hills Information Security. Yeah, Black Hills Information Security. There you go.
Terrible.
That's okay. Just keep it. This is all great. This is what people like. They don't like polish. They like this. This is real world. This is great.
Yeah, no one who listens to this podcast likes polish.
This is New York punk rock 1979. Go with it. It's Sid Vicious.
What kind of furniture could we buy from Black Hills Consulting? Just out of interest.
I have no idea. It's like sales consulting.
Okay.
I don't know.
Sorry about that. But you are in South Dakota, which is a state that I know nothing about and was excited to ask you about. And then you told me that you live near Deadwood and I got really excited and was a little bit overwhelmed. And then you told me a fun fact about Deadwood. Tell me again what your fun fact is.
So we were talking about Deadwood, the TV series, right? And it's been very hard for me when people talk about Deadwood and I ask about the episodes and things like that. And I ask if certain things that happened in Deadwood show up on the show. And I guess Seth Bullock is on the show and there was this thing where Wyatt Earp showed up on the show too. But what didn't make it on the show, at least from what I've heard, is Wyatt Earp and his brother were going to start a firewood company. They were going to, you know, deliver firewood, which was a thing. But Wyatt Earp had his eye on becoming the sheriff of Deadwood, but Seth Bullock already was. So Seth Bullock called him out in the street, kicked his ass up and down the street, and then Wyatt Earp left. And Wyatt Earp then went to Tombstone, Arizona, and that's where we had Tombstone. So that's a little bit of background on how that whole entire thing went out. But I hear that the swearing on Deadwood is a little bit more reduced than it's not quite historically accurate.
I really hope that's true. Particularly the Al Swearengen character,
Much
he has it in his name.
But if you ever come out here, you'll find out that that's actually real. Like, we do talk like that. That's actually locals.
Good.
We swear like sailors. So.
Well, I love this story. I'm super happy that you could enlighten me and share the story with us. And did you not say that your office is in somewhere called Spearfish?
Yeah, that's also not a joke. So my office is in Spearfish, South Dakota. We bought a flower shop, which is weird. We wanted to buy a building, and we were going around trying to find a building. And we found this flower shop for something like $150,000. And it's this building that's 100 years old this year. And I'm upstairs in that building right now. It's like 3,000 square feet, but it's old and decrepit. And the flower shop people, it was called Cora's Creations. And they kept on trying to get us to buy the flower business too. I'm like, I'm not interested in the flowers. I'm not interested in the flower business. And they're like, no, no, but it's a good business. And, you know, you can buy the business from us as well. I'm like, I'm not interested. But still to this day, we have people come in and they're looking for roses and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they're confused, like hella confused when they walk in and there's like all this computer stuff all over their place. And like, do you have roses? I'm like, no, we're out of roses.
But we have some guys in black hoodies. Would that interest you?
Yeah, we got black hoodie people. Is this a cult?
Yes. Yes. You can sell them like artful GPU arrangements.
Yeah, exactly. All of our GPUs that are fried from doing password cracking for 2 years. Mm.
I like that. I like the idea of like sort of a bespoke GPU arrangement to show the special someone that you care.
Yeah, we have to do some like artsy crap on the walls because I guess our walls are boring. So yeah, I'll just have our roasted GPU remains on the wall in an arty format.
Very industrial.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming, guessing perhaps would be better, that you didn't want to come on just to share with us fun facts about Deadwood.
I'm here because Todd invited me, and I actually felt bad because Todd has this really grand idea of all these pen testing companies sharing data with each other and, you know, trying to get a really good visibility on what attacks look like. And I'm all on board, but I'm really busy and the world is ending right now. So I feel guilty. This is me doing penance to Todd to feel better.
Oh my God, I like this. Well, we could get a lot of people on just by leveraging just a little guilt, bit of emotional blackmail. I think this could work out super well.
The guilt trip, the Todd guilt trip. Get them on. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty much why I come on as well.
Yeah. I mean, so like you guys do a bunch of pen testing and I'm curious, without like delving into forward-looking statements or whatever you have to do with investors, if you have any, how's it going? I figure remotes are still okay, right? So
yeah, remotes. Well, almost all of our work was remote. We didn't like going on site. When I was working at Accenture and Anderson Consulting years ago, Anderson Consulting was like, everything's got to be on site. And Accenture's like the same thing. So because of the whole Enron debacle, they had to change their name, but I hated that. I absolutely hated traveling and I really wasn't doing my best work when I traveled. So when we started BHIS, we did our best to make sure that we didn't travel, which is weird because all my employees are like, that's great. I can stay with my family. I don't have to get on an airplane. It's awesome. And then they start working from home and it's usually about 3 months later, they call me up and they're like, hey, do you have any remote gigs? I need to go. I need to get out of here. Where is there some place you could send me? But it has to look like I'm fighting with you, so my wife thinks it's okay, or my husband, or my significant other thinks it's okay. But yeah, periodically our testers are like, please, for the love of God, send me to New York, and we can make that happen pretty easy.
Well, so then you've been ahead of the curve then, basically. So yeah. Are you one of those irritating people on the internet who say like, oh, I've been working at home for years. It's super cool. I love this thing.
I don't. I usually say that working from home is horrific if you don't know what you're doing. Because I remember when I first started working from home, this is like, you know, 10 years ago, back before it was cool. So I was working from home and I remember my wife was like, you know, here's all the things that you can do. You can mow the lawn. You can do this. You can do this. You can do this. And of course, I didn't have time to do that. Right. She's like, but you were home all day. I'm like, but I was working. I think that it takes a while for people to get into a rhythm, with their family members to let them know, that it's kind of a job. And this is kind of funny. We actually, where I was living, I had an attic. That's where my office was. It was up on the third floor of the house. And my wife would come up periodically. And I was working a forensics engagement. And the forensics engagement was a city employee that was surfing a tremendous amount of really crappy porn at work. And it was crappy porn because they had like WebSense back in the day before it was ForcePoint. And he was going to the Wikipedia and doing a wiki search for like, you know, various anatomy parts.
Cool.
PG-13, right? And you know you've hit rock bottom if you're going to Wikipedia for your porn. That's the equivalent of drinking Pernod as an alcoholic. And so he was just curious.
He could have been.
He was really curious a lot throughout the day. A lot of research in that wiki. He was studying for, you know, Zemcat or whatever. But my wife comes upstairs And I have this big screen and there's porn all over the screen, right? It's just tons of porn all over. And she walks in and she's got this cup of soup. She sees the porn and she's like, "You're working, huh?" And I'm like, yeah. Working on this case. I'm trying to censor these pictures for the report because, you know, the customer doesn't want to have porn in the report. I'm like, I can understand. And she brings up the cup of soup and she sets it on the table. And she's like, "Well, when you're ready, come on down. We got the rest of dinner. And I'm going to lock the doors so the kids don't come up here." I'm like, "That's cool." And I realized that I was pushed through the working at home barrier where now my wife walks in on me. And if there's porn all over my screen, she assumes I'm working and it's no big deal. And she keeps the kids away from what I'm doing. So that's good.
Amazing. So the remote thing, you guys have really kind of embraced it. And you've even gone as far as doing some events through the virtual... through the internet, this thing that I've heard of.
Yeah, the thing that works sometimes now that we've all broken. So we were running Wild West Hacking Fest, or we call it Way West Hacking Fest in San Diego. We run two cons, Wild West Hacking Fest in Deadwood, South Dakota. We have about 1,000 people fly out to Deadwood for a hacking convention, which just blows the minds of the locals. They have no idea what's going on. But they're always like, "These people don't gamble." I'm like, "It's because they don't suck at math. Then why are they constantly popping up calculators on their screen?" But it's a whole other question.
But
so San Diego was happening and the world's going to hell. You know, I go to RSA and I present there, and then I go to B-side San Diego and I get home and we decide that we're going to move our whole conference in 3 days virtual, which is great because our content and community director, Jason Blanchard, was on a cruise when I made that decision, which just so many bad choices. And we managed to lift the entire conference virtual, all the presenters, all the training, except SANS. They pulled their training out. And we basically pulled the whole thing and we put it all together and the conference went off without a hitch. And then we started helping other conferences make the lift too. Cause it's not easy. It's not easy to do at all, but it was great. We added Discord channels, multiple rooms. We had lobby cons and it couldn't have gone much better.
Considering that's astonishing actually. Like, how do you make a lobby con work virtually?
You do it in Discord. So we found out in Discord, we can, if you don't know what Discord is, it's like Slack. If you don't know what Slack is, it's like IRC, and that should help people out.
Right.
If you don't know what IRC is, you shouldn't be on the internet.
Welcome to computers. So we can set up different rooms in Discord for the actual track talks while people are talking. We had breakout rooms. Now we're going to set those up for the vendors. And then we had a lobby con where people just talked about whatever struck their fancy, and there was lots of pictures of cats, and it worked out well.
I'll say, like, so I went to Pancakes Con that fateful Sunday morning, and the thing that struck me was the competence of the moderators. Like that seemed like that was the key. Is and it felt like people had done this before. So like it was from a consumer point of view. Good job for Pancakes Con. I know you guys helped out with that quite a bit, to the point where like all the email was originating from you somehow.
Yeah, that actually, that's because they used our platform. Yeah, that was by accident. Yeah. We set up our they ran on top of our platform. So we currently have like 4 or 5 GoToWebinar and GoToMeeting licenses because we hate money. And we just set those things up. And so those, anything that comes from them came from me. And we're trying to fix that so it's more generic in the future. But yeah, you talk about doing it. We do webcasts every single week. And for BHIS, like the free training webcasts that we do, we get anywhere between 1,500 to over 2,000 people registered. And then live, we get around 1,000 people to about 1,500. So we were very, very, very familiar with dealing with scale. And then we've also been doing some free training for like network threat hunting and things like that using open source and free tools. And that's been popping at over 6,500 people. So we have a really good, solid experience base with running virtual conferences and doing this at scale. And it's funny with Zoom, everyone's using Zoom and we're like, "Oh God, please don't use Zoom." But everyone loves Zoom because you can change your background and it looks cute. And now you're seeing this week, like vulnerabilities coming out for Zoom because every hacker in the world is using Zoom all the time. So we've kind of come on the platform of using GoToWebinar. It's not 100% beautiful all the time, but it just is rock solid for what we're doing. And we're happy to share it with any con that wants to move virtual.
I'm so impressed by that. I really am. Like, so just going back to the first one that you did, you said you did that in like some staggeringly short amount of time. What was the amount of time between you?
Three days. 3 to 4 days. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought you said, but I was like, no, it's got to have been weeks.
No.
That's insane. No.
Well, okay, and but it's one of those things, right? Like, it's 3 days and also at least a couple of years of having done a lot of things, things, right?
So, right. It's amazing, though. It's a huge accomplishment, I think, honestly. Yeah. Like, a huge organizational accomplishment.
It was shocking. Like, I was watching it unfold on Twitter. I was like, oh, they're actually doing it. Oh, it sounds like it's super rad. Oh, I'm going to totally go to PancakesCon because this one seemed to work out so well.
Did you, this is a very important question. Did you make pancakes to attend PancakesCon?
I did. I made pancakes that morning, but the pancakes were consumed by the time I got to White Russians. So I actually cleaned off the table and then I set up the cameras to record White Russians. And it was funny because while we're eating pancakes, I'm setting up the camera on the table and everybody's kind of sitting around pulling out the whiskey and the vodka and setting it down and lining it up and kind of doing that whole thing. And it's just so bizarre because like in my household, like nobody blinked. No one asked any questions. Kids were just like, I was like, hey, you kids got to go away today. And they're like, okay, well, we'll go take care of the pigs and the cows and things like that. I'm like, all right. And that's normal in my house. You know, dad's got cameras in the kitchen again. So
I also had pancakes for PancakesCon. I did not make them. My lovely wife made them. But since she's an attorney, they were $600.
Oh, my God.
$100 an hour pancakes.
Right. And you can't actually discuss them any further than you already have.
Yeah. I'm already dangerously close to the NDA. Yeah.
Awesome. I feel like I really want pancakes, frankly. I wonder if I can persuade the people I'm staying with. But like for less money, hopefully, than you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are expensive pancakes, man.
Right. They better have been good. So you're basically saying, hey, we will do this for anybody that wants to take their conference virtual. And have you got other ones?
Yep, we did. So anybody that wants to take, we've taken KernelCon virtual. They went earlier this week.
Is that KFC's conference?
I like that with a K. It's Nebraskans. And they just crushed it. They used Zoom, but we kind of walked them through setting up the Discord channel and doing that. So, and I can't remember what some of the other ones that we have set up. There's a DerpCon. That's coming out of Denver. They want to go virtual, so we're going to help them out. And then there was another B-Sides, one in Florida and then another one up in Canada. So if you just want to get on the phone with us, you know, shoot me an email and get you in contact with Jason because he does all the work anyway. And it's my expendable labor. So it's like, hey, Jason, do this. And he's like, okay, that's great.
But yes, and by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Leslie Carhart is the motive force behind Pancake Scott.
Oh, yeah, no question. Well, when you think about it, BHIS, we have Jason, we have Deb, and we have Velda. And then we also had a whole bunch of people in system support from like D-Rock, Rick Wisser, one of our pen testers, Joff was willing to help. So we had the support group of people that had done this before. And Leslie, just full disclosure, like setting up the schedule, doing all the organization and all that logistics stuff, she did it all by herself like in a week. So just an amazing, amazing amount of work that she did. And, you know, she had great support and great people were helping her, but I know what she went through and it was a lot. That's a lot of work.
For people who don't know Leslie, she goes with her Twitter handle Hacks for Pancakes, conveniently enough. And it's definitely worth taking a look at her Twitter profile and saying hi.
She's follow. Awesome.
Yes, absolutely. And so you had mentioned people who want to chat with you can reach out. What is your web address or like, how do you want to do that? How do you want people to reach out?
I just go to blackhillsinfosec.com and just contact us. And it's all going to get routed to Jason and Deb.
Not Black Hills Consulting. Do not.
Not Black Hills Consulting. I think that's furniture and sales consulting.
Not them.
Weird stuff there. Weird stuff.
Right. All right. So what did you learn along the way? Like, I'm assuming it wasn't all smooth sailing, that there were probably some like oopsies at some point or some like, why the what? Moments.
I think number one, I shouldn't have let Jason go on a cruise in the middle of COVID. That would have been really helpful.
It's just a bad idea, regardless of whatever pandemic is happening. I mean, right? I don't understand why people opt into like the stomach virus petri dish.
Not even a pandemic. I mean, it's like every other week they're like, all these people on this cruise, it tipped over. Or this cruise, they have Ebola and they're off the coast of Louisiana, weighing their options. But anyway, that would be one thing. But there was some other things about the layout of the Discord channels that would be very cool. There's also some things that we're trying to work out, especially in relation to vendors, right? Vendors are the lifeblood of conferences. A lot of people don't know this, but most vendors don't make their money to actually make the conference happen on ticket sales. They make it specifically off of vendors.
It's the sponsorships, right?
They do, right? And the vendors get treated like garbage at so many conferences. Sure do. And I don't care what your opinions are of vendors at conferences and things like that. The mere fact that they're there shows that they're supporting that event. Yeah. And we should thank them, right? So trying to figure out how to do that virtually is going to be a problem moving forward.
I will say, like, I appreciate you bringing that up since we work for a vendor. And I will say from the point of view of somebody who has, you know, pursued getting marketing dollars to support small local events, you know, if you're doing a small local event, the chances are that you are not putting money into a conference because you think it's going to get you lots and lots of sales leads, right? Like, it's not like a cold, cynical thing that you're doing. There is at least some element there about wanting to support the community that you're in. And so when that community then behaves in a toxic way, as if like you're somehow evil by your presence, it is a little jarring, I will say.
There are absolutely vendors that look at it that way, without question, right? Like, I remember I was talking with a vendor. This was over dinner, and she was talking about how all of her success at a conference was purely based on the number of emails that she collected. And she was talking about how stressful that was. And my recommendation was get a job at a different vendor. That's not the way that you should be looking at things. But there's a lot of vendors that look at things in purely those terms.
Right.
And I'm still happy that they're supporting the event. But whenever we talk with people, they're like, exactly how many names am I going to get? Do I get a lead guarantee? It's like,
right.
No, I can't give that to you. But most of the, actually all of our vendors are great. We love working with them. They're great to work with. And then the big thing that I like working with vendors is who's actually contributing to the community in a meaningful way. Like, you know, not, people be like, well, of course he's on Rapid 7. But honestly, let's back up for a second. How many vendors actually contribute in the form of open source and webcasts and articles and in data at the level of like a Rapid 7 type firm or a Trusted Sector or BHIS?
Go on.
And that's true. That's why I like, showing up on some of these things. So I think that people need to recognize that. And, you know, give some vendors some love, because I think, once again, they're kind of the fuel that drives a lot of these conferences, and we do need them. And to be honest, you know, we do need products. So it's a great opportunity for people to mix. And I hope it isn't shut down for like the next year, because that's going to be a problem.
I will say as well, like, I, you know, before I ended up in security, I worked in a lot of different tech fields, B2B tech fields. And security has more conferences and meetups than any other tech sector, B2B tech sector I've worked in, by like a factor of like several thousand, I think. Yep. It's sort of astonishing, actually, which is actually nice. Like, it's a lovely thing that the community wants to get together so much and to participate and engage and to teach each other. I think it is a really lovely, great thing, and it's part of what makes it a community. But you know, when you're talking about vendors having a presence at these things, like, you need to understand, as an event organizer, the amount of sheer competition you have in getting dollars out of people or getting their participation or their engagement. Like, there are just a lot. We reckon there's probably about 3,000 security conferences in North America that ask for our money every year. Yeah. That's a lot.
And it is a tremendous amount. And I think, you know, we've realized, and this is just for BHIS, that whenever it comes to conferences, when you're talking about quality of conferences, and this is a horrible thing to say, but the value that I get as an attendee or as a vendor at places like Black Hat and RSA isn't nearly what you would think it would be. We tend to do much better at like the smaller B-sides events. We do better at like our conferences and small conferences, DerbyCon when it was actually happening. And I just think that there's a lot more value for attendees in those, because you're not so overwhelmed. It's like DEF CON this year. It was spread across 95 hotels in Vegas, mm-hmm. and it was impossible to see absolutely everything. It was like this overwhelming rat's nest, which is cool in its own way, but I don't feel like I was able to make that many connections with people. It was just basically running from event to event to event.
And you're constantly competing for airtime against 5,000 other shiny, noisy distractions. I totally agree with you. Like I will take, you know, a schmoo over a DEF CON any day of the week. Although I do love the villages of DEF CON very, very much.
Yeah, I will come out on team DEF CON here. DEF CON is a kind of a class of its own. Like I'm like as we're talking about this, I just keep thinking like, well, there is a difference between a trade show and a conference / meetup thing, right? And the DEF CON is its own kind of thing, right? Like it's
maybe Black Hat would be a fairer comparison.
Sure. Yeah. Black Hat is a trade show at this point, you know, and it kind of always has been.
Yeah. No, absolutely has. Yeah.
And it's like, honestly, you know, we try to set up Wild West Hacking Fest, so it is a little bit overwhelming. Like when you show up, you have the talks, you have the workshops, you have the training, you have all of the different labs that are set up. We want people to say that there's no way they could have hit absolutely everything within that year, and that's great. And that's one of the things I think that DEF CON is doing that I think helps is they're breaking it up into these villages, right? So like you have the embedded device hacking village, you have the social engineering village, you know, you have the hardware hacking village. And what's beautiful about those, because we're sponsors for the hardware hacking village when we go in there. Actually, we were right next to you guys last year. And it was really, really cool because the people that were there in that room, they wanted to learn that specific skill and it had that type of really nice tight-knit feel in that. And that was awesome. But then I went to Whose Slide Is It Anyway with Danny. And that was madness. Like thousands of people. There was a guy that was wearing a horse head that was serving up liquor. It was so bizarre. But I think that that's kind of that alternation that you get at DEF CON that you just don't get anywhere else. And thank God it's only one time a year.
Right, because then you can spend the rest of the year trying to gird yourself for the next one.
Oh, mentally, I'm already trying to prepare myself, right? It's coming. It's coming. Brace yourselves.
Do you think that it will be on this year, or do you think that we'll be still dealing with fallout from
DEF CON is always canceled?
I was going to say, right, I just saw the email today that DEF CON was canceled.
I've definitely heard that. That's the, what I really relish as an idea is that they will legitimately cancel it, and people won't believe it's canceled because
no one will believe it.
And so
honestly,
everyone will
I was
turn
surprised
up.
In so I live in Austin, and we had to cancel South by Southwest this year, and at the time. This was, you know, in the before times, right? This was back in like March 2nd or something.
Before times.
And it happened. I'm like, oh my God, this is a disaster because you're going to cancel South by, you're going to have no infrastructure. You're going to have nothing. And you're still going to have like a zillion people show up and like clog up my city and like be dumb. That didn't happen. So like we closed off South by and pretty much no one showed up. So
but, I mean, by the time you closed off South by, like, it was early doors, but it was still late enough that a lot of the airlines were saying, you know, we will refund flights and that kind of stuff. A lot of hotels were saying they would honor it, that kind of thing.
And there are years of lawsuits to be coming on.
Sure.
Like, who's on the hook for the convention center? That was a whole thing here in Austin. But at any rate, like if DEF CON actually does get canceled, I do expect a cadre of diehards and kind of dumbasses to show up.
I don't think it's going to get canceled. I think by August, I think that a lot of the restrictions will be up, but I think that there's going to be a huge hit to Black Hat and DEF CON. And I'm being optimistic, right?
It's hard to plan for it today, you know? And
it
we're
is.
Already
it's
in
really
April.
Hard.
And like that CFP closes like in 10 days. So
so are we ever going to go back to that at the level that we've seen? Or am I going to sit around and tell stories to my grandchildren? It's like, we used to have conferences that had 46,000 people in the same room. And our kids will look at us and be like, grandkids will look at us and be like, you did what? That's so filthy.
Their eyes will go wide over their permanent masks that they
have. Exactly. All the time.
Yeah.
But do we ever get to go back to that? And I have this intense fear that that is gone.
I'm hopeful that it'll be a slow pickup.
I'm hopeful too that we can get back to it.
I don't think it's gone permanently, but I think it'll take a while.
It'll take a while.
I hope so. I hope it does come back because as insane as these things are, and as I get older and the DEF CON parties are like more and more insane and I'm in bed by like 8, 9 o'clock sure. anytime I go to Vegas, that is a huge part of where I came from.
Yeah.
And it's a huge part of who we are. And I wish and I hope that that is continuing to be available for the younger and newer generation in security coming up, because it's going to be really sad if that becomes extinct.
Yeah. I mean, and DEF CON is a young man's game. a young person's game. And Vegas is a young person's game. But like, honestly, one of the best parts of DEF CON, at least for me over the last couple of years, is the streaming talks reliably in your room across
your four hotels.
It has been like when that picked up and like worked, when it worked, like there was a lot of promises and then it didn't really work out so well, but then it got good. Right. So I feel like DEF CON's already on that track of virtual. So it wouldn't be too bad.
I don't know, because I think that there's a difference between when you want to consume content versus when you want to get hands-on with things versus when you want to just engage in an informal setting. And I think, you know,
and that's the other side, right? That's the villages.
And John, when you talk about the way that you've been creating your virtual conferences, like obviously you've thought about how you leverage Discord and you make it so that you can create that LobbyCon effect. But humans, ultimately, I don't think we're going to lose that quality where we like to gather. I think that's so ingrained in us as a species that virtual will only get us so far on that.
Yeah.
In the long run.
I agree. I hope. I really do.
Look, I'm a big fan of cities. I think cities are one of the greatest inventions of all time. They're 10,000 years going strong.
Do you have a bumper sticker that says that?
I do. Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm a big fan of the Holocene era, where we build cities. This may be the thing, right? That switches over. That's very somewhat pessimistic. But you know, it has implications for real estate. It has implications for just like how people live their lives. When it turns out, if virtual turns out awesome, and by the way, where are you, Oculus Rift, on this? Like, why are we not VRing everything already? But anyway, I do think that I think there is a small chance that this kind of shift can be somewhat permanent. You know, we all have got webcams, we've got little computers in our pockets. Like, there's not, I'm with you. There is something very fundamental to the human experience of getting together in the same space.
You put that so much more elegantly than I did.
But over the next year-ish or so, we're going to be training on how to not do that. So
yeah. Well, and let's tie this back to security, right? I've talked to a number of security firms. BHIS has been doing pretty well. You know, we talked about it pre-show banter and the pre-show 2 days ago. But we've been doing okay, right? And there's going to be a cliff. I think the sales they're going to fall off whenever the horror starts settling in over the next few weeks, right? But whenever you talk about this fundamental shift, anytime that there's a dramatic shift in technology, security it explodes, right? So whenever we did dramatic shifts and we started developing Active Directory and things like that, security was really far behind the curve. If you go back to like 99 timeframe, we could even go back to the TSIC Orange Book series, but let's not. and there's these growths, right? Worms, whenever you're talking about like 2003, 03026, and you start moving up to, 08067 and Configure. Now, you know, we just got through this cloud shift, which was huge, and security still hasn't caught up with that. Like, we just haven't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now we're in the midst of a massive shift that we can't even define cleanly. And security is going to be at the forefront on that. So I think that people in security are in a great field for stability of jobs, because there is going to be job scarcity. There's going to be problems, right, from the economic perspective. But ultimately, security is a good place to be, because as everything's changing, as everything new starts exploding, they're going to need us now more than they ever did before. And we were already understaffed before this began.
I agree. And I think that is a lovely note to end on. A nice positive message to the security people, while also talking about the gloom of our future, our dystopian future. Awesome. John, thank you so much for joining us. This is a really interesting talk. And I love what you guys have done with the virtual conferences, and your offer to help the community is very inspiring. Thank you.
And hopefully we don't have to do them forever.
right. But if you are looking to do one, then check out Black Hills Information Security and check out the website and feel free to reach out to John. He made the offer. You heard it here. It's official. And they will help you figure it out, hopefully. All right. Thanks very much. So thanks again to our guest, John Strand, who is obviously doing great work in helping people continue to socialize, but from a safe and self-distanced place. So Todd, it's time for the rapid rundown. And
yes,
the last I checked, we're still in the middle of a global pandemic. And so that's awesome. Probably don't need to talk about that too much. But one thing I do want to talk about is you wrote this really awesome blog on Zoom and all the security issues that it's been banging on about. And so I'd really like to hear your take on that.
Yeah, Zoom. It is apparently everyone's favorite punching bag. Zoom had some security issues, but on the whole, they are pretty minor. But you wouldn't know that by looking at all the breathless reporting, not just from security tech people who are usually breathless about this kind of thing, but I would say the volume got so pitched that mainstream media started picking it up. Like, I heard a story about Zoom on the Media, which is like one of my favorite podcasts. They're great. But with everybody know has a big butt, and this one does too. It was all about Zoom. What was the story on all the media? It was one of them. There were like five of them over the last week, right? Which was crazy. You know, there was the one about leaking data to Facebook. That was the one actually that got coverage on all the media. There was one about them not doing end-to-end encryption, which is accurate. We can talk about that in a bit. There was one about them leaking Windows passwords. One about them hijacking the Mac OS system interface.
My favorite was how they're in collusion with China. I was like, I'm sorry, what now? Do you have an iPhone? Also manufactured in China.
Yep, that was published, I think, on Friday morning. This last Friday, like April 3rd or something. So all of these, you know, they sound scary. When you say them all in a row, even like that, sounds super scary. I am here to tell you, Zoom is okay for you unless you fall into one of these categories. One, you are discussing top secret stuff, like literally top secret clearance things that spies want to get a hold of. Don't use Zoom for that. You are discussing intellectual property that someone like that Beijing proper wants to steal from you. So like you're an aeronautics company and you've got some cool anti-grav tech that you don't want Chinese government to have. Don't use Zoom for that. or you are planning a criminal conspiracy to execute against a fairly high profile target. Don't use Zoom for that. So those are basically your three categories of people who shouldn't be using Zoom. So if you're planning on stealing high-tech anti-gravity while being a spy at the CIA, then don't use Zoom for this. That is a bad idea.
Words to live by, frankly.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like there is a lot, and don't get me, like I like talking about crypto. I'll talk about crypto all day long. Crypto as in cryptography, not as in cryptocurrency. Though I'll talk about that too. the cryptography in Zoom is not great. It's imperfect, but it's good enough for most people. So there is a particular mode of cryptography that is being used in Zoom called ECB. It's electronic code book. It is super bad for things like video and pictures, but I haven't seen anyone actually, right?
I mean, that does seem to be like quite a big part of Zoom.
It's good for, like, ECB is good for, like, very short, like, text or, like, binary messages, like, things that are super short, like a paragraph, like a tweet. Like, it would be great for encrypting a tweet, but it's not good for, like, streaming video. But I haven't seen any, like, proof of concept about it, so I would think that it's like, oh, it's so stupid and lame, and you should never use it on pictures. Like, where's the proof of concept? Like, I don't see it. And there are lots of people who really wanted to, like, you know, kick Zoom. And I would expect to see that, right? Especially this last week. If it doesn't show up this week, I'm thinking, like, the HTTPS wrapping, and also they have some other weird crypto wrap around Zoom. It's probably good enough. If you can't extract that without key material, which is what Citizen Labs did, Citizen Labs was able to extract images, but they also had the key. So, okay. I mean, weird flex. It was great. You know, good research, good packet teardown and everything.
They have very, very smart people doing lots of great things, but they also mainly are concerned with people who actually might fit into one of your categories, right? Like people who are activists in oppressed regimes.
Sure.
And so have a very different risk model.
Yeah, crime may include whistleblowing, you know?
Right.
So yeah, if you're hanging out in a place that is known to listen in on your telecommunications, then, you know, Zoom, and you're interesting enough. I can't stress that enough, because Zoom has 200 million unique users a day now. And if you're in, like, it still takes time to do that kind of intelligence and counterintelligence work. Boy, even if you are committing crime over Zoom, like, probably no one's going to notice.
This is not an endorsement. So I guess, like, by the same token that everyone loves an underdog, apparently people really want to gun for you if you're not the underdog and are, in fact, a $35 billion company or whatever it is.
They are. I assume they're still a $35 billion. I don't know. Their stock price moves around quite a bit.
don't they all at the moment? But yeah, so it does seem like people are gunning for them a little unfairly. That said, I do think it should be pointed out, like, so, you know, you talked about the encryption thing. My understanding from reading your blog, which is great, and I cannot say this enough, check out Todd's blog. It's really good. But my understanding from reading that is that there are not a whole lot of video conferencing solutions that are necessarily doing that much better on the encryption thing, like actually providing end-to-end, for example, which is part of the contentious piece.
Yeah, the only one that comes close is Apple's FaceTime.
Right.
FaceTime, if you tick the boxes, does do, it's probably default by now. FaceTime does do end-to-end encryption. Which means only the participants of the FaceTime call can see the content. Like, Apple doesn't get to see it.
Right.
But that's the thing. It's Apple only. So, like, it does not have the cross-platformness of Zoom. It certainly doesn't have the scalability of Zoom. With FaceTime, you only get, I think, 32 other participants, which is usually enough, right? Like, if you want to talk to grandma or whatever, like, that's great.
Yeah.
And probably easier, too. Like, if everyone and has friends. Apple. Yeah, grandma and her friend. But if everyone has Apple, it's wonderful and it's free and it's great. But if you're using any other technology, like a real laptop or a non MacBook laptop or an Android phone or Chromebook, anything like that, you are back into, like, let's say Google Hangouts land, which does not support end-to-end encryption. Or you're using Jitsi, which does not support end-to-end encryption. Curiously, they are very defensive about that too. I don't know why. They're an open source project. People ask on their bug queue. It's like, do you support E2E? And they're like, sort of, but that's not really an answer. So, this whole issue.
This is a yes no answer. Finally, yeah, it's not
If you support E2E, you are screaming it from the rooftops because it is hard. So, which is why, like, Signal, for example, uses E2E for text, and they are very much in your face about that. Zoom's text messaging is E2E. So, like, if you're going to pass secrets, like, it would be actually kind of a cool thing. Like, you have your fake Zoom call where you're discussing boring stuff, but, like, planning a crime on the E2E text. Again, not of planning crimes. But you could do that. or you could have, like, right. How about a less evil implementation? You could be having a boring conversation with your priest about basketball while confessing sins in the text chat, and no one will hear it but your priest.
That is certainly how I use Zoom. Yes.
Right.
So then the flip side is that the thing that they did that basically, like, kind of invited a lot of this scorn on themselves is that they used misrepresentative language. Is that, like, they basically indicated they, like, used the term E2E, even though that's a pretty well-accepted term, right?
Yeah. It is a technical term that means a specific thing. And it looks like they meant it in more of a hand-wavy way. It does apply to the chat. It doesn't apply to the video. When you, like, you can mouse over. And who knows? Like, Zoom is changing super fast on the daily. So it may not even say that anymore. It used to be last week when you would mouse over the little green block thing at the top corner, it would say, this is secured with end-to-end encryption, when the video that you're actually hovering over isn't. But it may have meant something. They probably meant not the technical thing. I don't think they were intentionally trying to trick people into it.
Right. You don't think it was intended as false advertising. You think it was just that they were trying to describe a thing and using imperfect language.
Probably. That would be my guess. But that's up for attorneys to argue, which they will certainly argue.
You know, you're so much less cynical these days than you used to be about vendors. I like that.
Well, I've dealt with a bunch. Like, I'm a coordinated vulnerability kind of guy, and I see how vendors, like, I have seen vendors that have their heart in the right place, and I've seen vendors who don't. And like, Zoom feels to me, based on nothing but anecdote, this seems to be people who have, like, they've had their turn in the barrel like multiple times over the last week, and they're like, okay, we're trying to do the right thing. I mean, the CEO announced like a feature freeze, which is now, we're on day 3, I think, of the feature freeze. So the next 86, 87 days, don't expect any new features from Zoom, but expect lots of security goodness, you know, so that's good. And it's super easy for a CEO to say that. I am very excited to see like what that actually manifests as. Like, I don't know how much that percolates down. Like, it's always easy for a C-level to say like security is our number one priority. But it really comes down to like the project managers and the product managers of prioritizing this. So, well, I mean, we'll see if that happens.
Although I suspect that in the situation, you know, the orders have come on from high,
yep,
saying no. In the same way that, you know, Microsoft so famously did when the trusted computing team was created, you know, that was something that came from the very top of Microsoft all the way down, and it was like a, oh no, we are going to fix this problem before we move on to other things moment. And I think maybe Zoom will have one of those now.
Yep. And you know, and I know I risk like sounding like a giant Zoom apologist and all that, but like the crypto, bad news. The other bugs, not that big of a deal. But they did have a chance last summer to deal with this. So there was a big issue in Zoom, big in terms of like got a lot of press. It still was kind of a lame bug, but it was a bug. It was for real. And they kind of blew off the researcher until the researcher went public, and then they fell all over themselves to fix it. So which gives the signal of like, oh, well, don't even bother reporting privately because nothing happens until reported publicly. Now, I do think they've learned their lesson. The aforementioned Citizen Lab has a bug with Zoom right now that they have reported privately, and they're working through it. So it would be, in fact, it sounds like it's an easy fix, but we don't know because there's no technical details, because this is what you're doing. It's still a little skeezy to say like, I have a bug, but you know, fine, you know, it's better than what we've been doing for the week. So I do expect that their private disclosure will get a lot better, especially over the next probably 2 or 3 weeks.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much for taking us through all of that, Todd. And you are keeping that blog updated as more comes out from Zoom and also about Zoom.
I am. I've already updated it once for the Citizen Lab stuff that published after the initial publish of the blog. If there's an issue being talked about this morning about Zoom videos getting snarfed on the internet, but it's like super not Zoom's fault. Again, it's another one of these things. If that gets any more coverage, I'll cover it, but I don't want to amplify it at this point. TLDR, yeah. If you save your Zoom recorded meetings somewhere where you don't have a password, people can find it. So, right, pregnant pause. So it's not stored, if it's not stored on Zoom, right, proper, if you didn't store it locally. So basically, if I take a file and I put it on the internet, people can find it. Okay.
That's a little bit like blaming Amazon for openness 3 buckets, right? Like you can't do that. That's a user.
It's even worse. It's a Google dork issue. So Google dorking is where you find like a certain file pattern or a certain URL pattern and you just like look for it and Google will hopefully tell you about it. It's like the easiest kind of showdown at home basically. And this falls into that category. So like I can say the same thing about anything named .docx. You know, it's like, oh, Office. I can see all my Office docs on the internet when I put them on the internet. Like, that's the story. So anyway, exclusive right now on the podcast, not in the blog unless it gets more pickup today. Then I'll cover it.
Okay, so we're gonna wrap up. My final note, though, and we are massively over our rapid rundown here, but yeah. As my final note, I will just say, you know, this is a time when people are embracing video conferencing who have not always done that. It's quite new to a lot of people, and there's a much heavier reliance on it than there has been before. And so things are gonna happen. People are gonna mess up. They're gonna forget that they're on video. People are going to embarrass themselves in some ways. You're going to have lots of pictures of people looking not at their shining best. Mm-hmm. I would just remind people that we are in a situation where we really should be using our compassion as much as possible. This is not a time where you should be like rubbing your hands together gleefully, hitting record, and then sharing videos of people at their most embarrassing. Like that's just, it just, it's, yeah. It doesn't reflect well on you if you're the person doing that. So please don't be that person. All right, here endeth the sermon, the lecture. Todd, thank you so much for taking us through all of this. If you guys want to read Todd's blog, your best bet is just into the Google machine. Todd Bizzi,
Zoom, Bugbear.
Yeah, you will get it. Yes, even if you just do Zoom and Bugbear, you will probably find it. Yeah. And Todd will be very happy that you get to see his Bugbear picture.
Yes.
So, again, thank you to our special guest for this week, John Strand of Black Hills Information Security. Nailed it! And to my co-host, Todd Bisley. And as ever, thank you to our amazing producer, Bree Hand. Thank you so much, Bree. Have a great week. We will speak to you again probably next week, probably still from the attic.